Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And another good soggy afternoon on Saturday. You're listening to Upstate Outdoors on 106.3 WORD with Philip Gentry and Tommy Springer.
Yes, indeed.
Mr. Springer's so happy about the weather outside, he can hardly contain himself. Trust me, I've been in the studio for the last 45 minutes having to console him.
And thank you. Thank you and Money Penny both, because I was down in the dumps.
For a boy
and
from...
And I was cussing. And I was, well, I can't repeat most of it here on the radio.
For a boy from southern Alabama who's used to sunshine and sand.
And you and Money Penny told me to suck it up and make the people happy and entertained.
Well, I appreciate...
So that is what I'm going to do.
We told you to pull your panties up.
That
your big
too.
Girl panties on. Welcome to Upstate Outdoors. We have got a great show in store for you today. Going to start out with the Upstate Outdoors blog. Not real sure where I got this from. It just popped into my head about an alternative to tying fishing knots. It was actually part of some stuff I was doing last week, and I was like, you know, there's a lot of different ways to attach different parts of gear in a fishing rig than tying knots. And I got to write something about it, so here we go.
So I
put it together. So pretty interesting. If you're a heavy tackle fisherman, you might get something out of that. Then we'll be talking with State Senator Tom Corbin, as promised last week, about the Tall Pines WMA and get some of the background information on this property that has been added, 1,700-odd acres in northern Greenville County. So looking forward to talking to Senator Corbin about that. As a matter of fact, this is kind of going to be our state legislature show today, because we've also got, I'm jumping ahead of myself, but during the second hour, we're going to have Senator Stephen Goldfinch from down around Merle's Inlet, South Carolina, and we will be talking with him about the coyote bounty, and that is a bill that he authored. It is Senate Bill 489, and so we'll get a little bit more detail from Senator Goldfinch about that. And
Goldfish. You know what's on our mind, don't you, buddy?
Goldfish. Then we'll talk about during the end of the first hour, why are turkey numbers declining? I guess that kind of fits in together. Turkey population there's not a short answer. You can't say, well, it's this.
Right.
You can't say, well, it's overhunting. You can't say, oh, it's all on the coyotes. You can't say, oh, it's all habitat.
I believe it's a combination of several things.
It is. And of course, the cool thing or not cool thing about this, it's all from Field and Stream. I don't want to ruin the segment, but they leave out what I think one of the biggest problems is.
Agreed.
So we'll talk about that. Then during the top of the second hour, Springer's going to bring us the Roadkill Cafe in honor of our buddies at Carolina Farm and Wildlife Supply.
Exactly.
What are we cooking today?
We're cooking squirrels Springer way, baby. I was trying to picture if that many squirrels was coming in at one time.
Yeah.
Okay. And somebody, you know, there's always somebody in the crowd. Hey, man, we ought to cook some of these up. Okay.
Yep.
I'd say, hey, Bart, go get me a fried daddy and some grease. And a little bit of corn batter, and I can do this, and it won't take very long, and I can whack them, stack them, clean them, cut them, fry them, and feed them up.
What time's the weigh-in?
I'm not sure.
Is it like 5:30 or something?
I think so.
You better be careful. Your phone might ring. Springer, come down here and cook up all these squirrels for these people.
And I'm going to also talk about how I go about cleaning.
Yeah.
Okay, if I'm going to have a whole lot of squirrels, okay, this quick, efficient, effective way to do it, okay?
A golf ball and a pickup truck?
No, that's deer.
No, oh, okay. A marble and a roller skate?
I don't
know. Yeah, close. And as promised, like I said, we're going to talk to Senator Stephen Goldfinch from the lower part of the state. We'll talk about that legislation that's pending now. Also, we have got some news from DNR about aquatic plant management. You're like, dude, you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel on that one. But... It's kind of near and dear to me because they're putting out there for public support, but public input about their spraying of the aquatic weeds in Lake Greenwood. And I was I was very happy to see that we had some type of vegetation growing in Lake Greenwood. Now they're going to turn around and spray it. So.
And you being a new property owner on Lake Greenwood.
Yeah, it's like, man, you know, you got to have something to have some habitat because there's so much development going on around the lake. So we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about some prescribed burning that's going on in one of the WMAs and also about the dive team with DNR and one of their outings lately. And then we'll wrap up the show with the calendar of events and our parting shot about a man who allegedly was attacked and killed by a bear, but that didn't turn out to be the case.
Drugs are bad. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, don't do drugs.
Kids. Yeah.
So how was your week, Springer?
Man.
Yeah?
I'm alive. I'm above ground.
Yeah.
My family's healthy.
You're building an ark in the backyard?
But, man, I don't know. I'm 54 years old, and I have never seen it rain this many days in a row in my lifetime.
I don't understand, because everybody's complaining about it's only rained twice this year.
Yeah, once for 35 days and the other for 15.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man. You really have to, as my dad been telling you, man, you got to stay strong. You got to have the right psyche, son. I said, well, yeah, that's fine and dandy when you're down on the Gulf Coast telling somebody up here to have the right psyche.
Yeah.
But I'm all right. How about you? You're fishing in this crap.
Yeah. Why not?
I mean, I'm sitting here just, yeah, and feeling like,
fish biting, man. I actually was talking with some folks today, actually went by to the guys that do some work on the truck. And had some regular service done, and we were talking about crappie fishing and all, and they're like, yeah, can't wait till the dogwoods bloom. I said, man, if you wait until the dogwoods bloom,
you're done.
You're
behind.
Missed it. Yeah. What you got to wait for, or what you're looking for, is the daffodils. When those yellow flowers start popping out.
And they're already doing that.
Oh, yeah, they're out everywhere. That's when you need to hit the water and start crappie fishing.
That's an oldie but goodie that I've heard all my life. Yep. Daffodils are coming up. You need to be crappie fishing.
Yep.
So, holds true.
Yeah, and it is. And they popped out early, and I was like, man,
yeah,
it's early this year, but hey, they don't lie. Daffodils don't lie when it comes to crappie fishing.
Yeah. Did you put a blade to those, or did you give them to somebody?
No.
I cleaned every
one of them.
Hoorah!
Well, not every one of them, but I mean, I brought home, let's say, I went to Greenwood yesterday and had probably 9 fish.
That's a good meal.
9. I'm talking about they were over 13
yeah,
inch.
Yeah, that's a lot of tacos.
Fish. And I tell you what, though, it's the mud and all the debris in the water. It made it tough for fishing. And so I don't know. It's going to be it'll get tougher. But, hey, that's the way things work.
What are we going to do about it?
The water's coming up good. That'll be good for the spawning grounds.
Right.
But I think they're going to get too much water too early, and then they'll have to let it back down. So it'll be a lot of up and down. And that's never a good spring.
Never.
When water levels are going up, and then the authorities let them back down so that they
got to relieve the pressure, man.
Yeah, so that they can keep stuff moving, then that's always tough on the fish and the fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Because they'll move up shallow and spawn, and then that water will come back down and leave all those eggs high and dry. So maybe with the grass they got in Greenwood. Right before they spray it.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it?
Well, it boils down to a matter of different users
yep.
have different priorities.
Yep.
And, you know, the people with the agitator boats, yep. We don't want all that stuff getting caught up in her.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
And that's going to be a constant battle.
Yeah.
The more and more people that move around here. I mean, it's just crazy.
They have a solution
to
it.
If they want a cement pond, then build a damn cement pond.
Well, they got one. It's up there in Oconee and Pickens County.
Bingo.
It's called Lake Kiwi.
Exactly.
We should designate that
exactly.
and make that the agitator lake. Y'all all go up there and leave everybody else alone.
Exactly. Don't want no grass touching my leg.
Let's go to our break. Then when we come back, we will jump into the Upstate Outdoors blog and give you some alternatives for tying heavy tackle.
Right here on Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD, Tommy Springer, Phillip Gentry. We're going to try to liven your day up because it shouldn't be too hard. So stay tuned.
Well, a lot of folks are using the change in the weather, or actually using all the rainy time.
There you go.
To sit inside and transition from hunting season to fishing season, which frequently finds anglers preparing fishing tackle for the upcoming season. This often means replacing fishing line as well as retying rigs. For big game anglers, re-rigging is sometimes more like a jigsaw puzzle, making sure this piece fits into that piece and getting the whole rig linked together. Now, working with heavy-duty pound test fishing line often means figuring out alternative ways to attach one piece of a rig to another without tying knots to every little piece. And to illustrate that, you ever try to tie a knot in a 100-pound test line?
Do it all the time.
Huh?
Do it all the time.
With what?
Same knot I use with the smaller, except I don't loop it around as many times.
Okay, well, be quiet. We're not talking about that.
Okay.
Thin monofilament fishing line and lightweight braided lines may be much simpler to tie into a variety of useful fishing knots, but when using 80 to 100-pound test line diameters, getting a good knot that will tie in a short space of line and hold up to the power it's rated for is a chore. Now, accordingly, many heavy tackle anglers opt for alternatives to tying knots in their heavy line. And the first one is crimping. Now, you do a lot of crimping, too, when you use wire.
I do on the wire.
On the wire. Now, most anglers think crimping, with the use of single or double metal sleeves, is only used for wire. But that's not true. In fact, crimping may be one of the best ways to secure thick diameter monofilament line, as the crimp grips the monofilament without causing damage to the line.
True.
Now, swivels is another way, and a lot of this involves tying, but it's connections using swivels and some other tackle. And this also includes some snaps, if you want to put that up under the heading of swivels. Swivels may be used as a tie point between different pound test or different composition lines where the two components are not compatible due to differences in line size or material. Now, snaps or snap swivels provide a tie point for one line that attaches to a loop, eyelet, or other connection. Now, snelling, do you ever do much snelling, Springer?
No. It's either the crimps or the knot I use.
That was actually something that I discovered a while back when I was doing a lot of trophy catfishing.
Okay.
And then if I'm doing some, I actually snell a lot of the big hooks.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm down on the coast shark fishing or fishing for big reds or something like that. Now, snelling is most commonly used to attach large diameter line to heavy gauge hook, and it's similar to tying a knot except for that the line wraps around itself and secures to the tag end of the shank of the hook rather than just the eye. Now, another alternative to tying a knot is looping. I think you mentioned that. Heavy diameter lines are simple to tie. When using a loop knot with a large opening, loops are most commonly tied using figure eight knots, and the loops can also be intertwined, bringing the leader through the loop to make a strong connection. Now, the next one is a twist, and that without, like if you're looking at like a bimini twist or a different kind
right.
of knot, that is a knot. But I'm referring to twisting the tag end of a line. Really only works when you're working with thin wire.
Yep.
That's for toothy fish like pike, mackerel, or sharks, but using pliable wire and putting enough twist in the connection often means the difference between a caught fish and a lost fish.
Yes, sir.
How many wraps do you put on for king mackerel?
Six.
Six?
Yep.
Always six.
Always six.
Yeah?
It's automatic. I mean, my brain is programmed for it.
What size wire do you use?
Anywhere. If it's smaller mackerel, about 27. I know that sounds light, but, you know, I'm fishing in real clear water.
Mm-hmm.
I get a lot more strikes.
You want thinner wire.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because they see it.
How about super glue? You ever use super
no,
glue?
No, but, well, not for my knots, but I've had to reapply rod eyes and stuff and whatnot.
And
seal cuts with super glue, but other than that, not doing knots.
Well, the use of glue to secure one section of a rig to another gained popularity with professional bass fishermen. Bass anglers were perplexed when a duly tied fishing knot worked its way loose during a fight with a fish and the knot failed. Now, accordingly, glue became a popular insurance step to prevent knots and monofilament line from coming unraveled. But since that time, super glue has become somewhat of a staple in many anglers' tackle boxes for not only gluing knots, but to help adhere a variety of hair and soft plastic trailers to fishing lures.
Yes. I've seen them use it on big swim jigs.
Yeah.
I mean, swim baits.
Well, it
makes it from, you know.
It keeps it from working loose.
Exactly.
And it extends. I feel like it extends the life of the plastic.
It does.
The only thing I don't like about it is when you keep doing it over and over, you get a buildup of super glue, like on a jig or something.
Yep.
Now, opinions vary, but one of the most popular and highest strength rated knots used for tying, and this is getting into an actual knot, heavy diameter braid to other tackles such as hooks, swivels, or other eyelets, is the Palomar knot. This is tied by looping the line, inserting the loop through the eyelet, then bringing the hook or swivel back through the loop, and then tightening the knot down. And that's a lot easier, especially if you're dealing with heavy test, you know, diameter line.
Yeah.
And a Palomar knot's probably, you know, getting back to, that's not the one, what's the one, what was the name of the loop? The knot
I just do the, you know, in through the eye, round, 6-7 times, and then back through. Okay, just like the, you know what I'm saying? The old knot, the old standby knot.
The clinch knot.
The clinch knot. And so when I go up to like 50 and 60 pound monofilament, which I'm using for a leader to catch Spanish with because the water's so clear again, I will just back down instead of wrapping it 6 or 7 times. I only wrap it about 4.
Yeah.
And still get the same. It still brings it down into a good cinch, and it's able to, that big monofilament's able to cinch down on itself a whole lot better.
How do you keep it from wrapping back over the eyelet because of the heavy diameter?
I keep tension on the hook at all times. Okay, I've got the hook. I'm holding it with a pair of needle nose pliers. I'm making the line moist once I get it done, and I'm constantly bringing it down, grab it with my finger, and then cinch it down, pull it tight, good to go.
There you go. Tommy Springer.
Well, it works. Yeah. It's worked for me for 50 years, man.
Worked for Springer for 50 years.
I don't do braid.
Yeah?
That's something that's I see guys using it, especially a lot now, where, you know, places I've never seen them use braid before.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing some of the knots they're signing, and I'm thinking, you know, braid could probably be good, but I just can't take that step, man.
And there are folks who will, like I was talking about swivels, who will go to, they'll put a swivel between, you know, braid, and if they're, like, if it's a casting leader, and they're going to use monofilament for that last 2 or 3 feet,
full
and they'll
carbon,
put a swivel in there. But the swivel doesn't always go through the guides, the rod guides. So there's a number of different knots to use to tie fluorocarbon to monofilament, or I'm sorry,
to braid.
To braid it to either fluorocarbon or monofilament. And yeah, sometimes it's tough. I've got one, actually, Edwin Evers, the bass fisherman.
Yes, sir.
He, and it's not like he showed me individually, but he was, you know, somebody had asked him, and we were standing around at the last Bassmaster, and he was like, let me show you. And he's just using one loop in the monofilament line or the fluorocarbon line and wrapping the braid around it and going in and out. And I use that one a good bit. The only thing I don't like about it is because of the way it ties the knot, it makes the tag end, which you got to cut real short, the tag end of the fluorocarbon leader sticks out too much. And if you don't trim it down real, real tight, it'll still hang up in the rod tip.
Agreed.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, well, there you go. Upset Outdoors blog.
Good stuff.
Yep. And let's go to our break now. When we come back, we're going to ring up our buddy, Senator Tom Corbin from Northern Greenville County, and talk a little bit about some newly acquired land for Department of Natural Resources.
Right here at Upstate Outdoors on this wet Saturday, Tommy Springer, Philip Gentry, and the Great Money Penny bringing it to you as we only do from the heart and soul. Stay tuned.
Well, last week we were covering the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources press release about the department acquiring 1,757 acres of land in northern Greenville County. It's going to become the newest game management area. And in part of the press release, they referenced a quote from our buddy Senator Tom Corbin. And I said, hey, we need to get Tom on the phone and talk with him about kind of some of the background on this property. So, Senator Corbin, welcome back to Upstate Outdoors.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's a privilege to speak to you, Philip and Tommy, and two famous celebrities like yourself. It's always my honor.
you sure you got the right number there?
Hey, we was gonna vote for you anyway, Tom. Yeah, you ain't got to go that far, okay?
Well, you know, I figure two guys that can sort of make a living and, you know, hunting and fishing. I mean, y'all got something going on that the rest of us just wish we had. So that makes you a celebrity.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, every Saturday when everybody's out on the woods and in the water, we're, We're right here behind a microphone, living it up.
Well, I've been told as quick as I get off this phone, I'm going to have a vacuum cleaner in my hand. So
there you go.
Put me on the phone as long as you want to, guys.
Yeah, amen.
Well, Senator Corbin, so we were talking a little bit about the new Tall Pines Wildlife Management Area, and and you were instrumental in that. That was a long project that took a while. Really wasn't on anybody's radar until it was finally finished. Give us a little bit of the background about that property.
Well, yeah, I'd be glad to. Growing up in northern Greenville County, I knew of the property and stomped around up there in the 70s and 80s and whatnot. And it had gotten into the hands of a developer some years back and was slated to be developed. And just a beautiful, large tract of property. And the developer went bankrupt. I think it was in 08 or 09. And so it was repossessed by the bank. And if my memory serves me correctly, it was then repurchased by another developer who in turn went bankrupt again. So it ended up in the hands of another bank, an out-of-state bank. So we began to work with DNR to, try to acquire the property, for game management. There's so much development going on that, it's wise to set aside land. Some of the greatest conservationists are hunters and fishermen. So myself and Mike Burns and Representative, our Senator-elect now, Dwight Loftus, began to work with DNR to try to get the property to them. And it was a long process. It took over between 4 and 5 years, really, to accomplish it, because the first thing you have to do is purchase it. So we reached out, and also with the help of Alvin Taylor, who's the director of DNR. He was wonderful through this process. He was a great friend and a great ally and helped us so much. And my hat's off to Director Taylor and everybody at the department. But the property was first purchased by the Conservation Fund, which is, the national group out of Washington. We, DNR had reached out to Jason Johnson, who's over that, to secure the property until we could acquire funding to get it to DNR. So they had it and they held it for years. And it was a long, arduous process because it's just, when the government's involved in anything, it takes a lot of time, seems like. But 4 years later, it came to fruition, and it was a great thing for Northern Greenville County and our hunters and fishermen up there, and I was really honored and proud to have a small part of it. So that's sort of the background and history of it.
And it's really cool to have something like the Conservation Fund, because you never know when somebody who, in this case it was an opportunity that came about, but a lot of times that you might have somebody who's held on to a piece of property that was maybe in their family or whatever, and they're like, we've had this land for a long, long time, and really don't want to see it turned into condos or home sites or subdivisions or whatever, and so they want to offer it to the public as public property, but coming up with the money to purchase that. So it's really nice to have something like the Conservation Fund that's kind of a placeholder until everybody can get their ducks in a row.
That's right. That's right. Because, it's hard to come up with $3 or $4 million. I mean, I couldn't come up with that. And I guess be hard for the average person to. It is that, that was the whole plan to get it there. And for the value, for what it was purchased for by DNR, was way below market value. So things like that come together, and to be able to work with the in conjunction with the Conservation Fund, it is a blessing, and I'm glad they were there. And there's also the State Conservation Bank, which played a part too. So it's without those pieces of the puzzle, it wouldn't have worked.
Well, Senator, I'm trying to think, and I'm fairly familiar with the area up there. This property is located on both the north and south sides of Moody Bridge Road up in Cleveland. It's about 8 miles north of Traveler's Rest. give me some better direction than that, because I'm really having a hard time putting my finger on it.
Okay. It's funny you should ask, because I was approached yesterday by a gentleman just coming out of the store, and he was asking me about it. And he said, why'd you have to announce that? Why don't you just call me and tell me about it, and then it would have kind of been all mine.
Yeah.
Bingo.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. But anyway, no, be glad to. It's a beautiful piece of property, and it's certainly for everybody. But if you go up Highway 276, are you familiar sort of where Echo Valley is?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. I think there's a Handy Mart there on the left, a big convenience store Handy Mart, and that's kind of the Echo Valley area. And right past there, you'll go over the river, you cross the bridge.
Yep.
And then 276 will sort of take a slight turn to the right, and Moody Bridge Road shoots off to the left at an angle. So if you take Moody Bridge there, you're about 25 and 6 miles away.
Okay. So not far from the Pickens County border at all.
That's right. Not far at all. And they DNR's got a big sign up now that says, you know, Tall Pines Wildlife Management Area, so it's easy to spot. And the big lake, the big pond, is right along the road. You can see it very well from the road.
Okay. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about now. I kept thinking it was up to the right, but you're saying Moody Bridge Road turning to the left off of there. Okay.
Yeah, so, if you're going north on 276, Moody Bridge will shoot off to the left. Now, if you're coming from the 11 side down the other way, it would take the right turn. So you're thinking about coming in from the other side.
And so the public land use of this property, it's going to be available for, I mean, do we know what, if any, hunting, fishing restrictions are going to be on there? Is it just going to be like I mean, is it going to be an archery only, like they usually do with smaller tracts of land, or will it be open for deer hunting, turkey hunting, and everything?
Yeah, the latter, yes. It should be open for deer, turkey, basically year-round. I mean, when I was talking with Alvin Taylor, the director of DNR, I said, you know, there's really something that you can hunt year-round now if you enjoy hunting coyotes and wild hogs and things like that. There's really no time that an avid hunter can't be in the woods. And
yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to be open year-round for hunting and actually fishing in the ponds and lakes and whatnot. So, to my knowledge, there's no restrictions on it.
And another facet of that, too, is that it's got over a mile along the South Saluda. Is it South Saluda River that runs through there?
Yes, sir.
And that is one of the rivers in northern Greenville County that's stocked by DNR with trout from the trout hatchery. So that'll be a lot of good access for those folks who want to go fish the put and take trout fishery that we have in northern Greenville County. And it's all three. Saluda actually has three branches, the North Saluda, Middle Saluda, and South Saluda. So this will be the one on this side.
Right.
But it's some good trout fishing in there too. Like it's hatchery supported, but some good trout fishing in there.
Yeah, it's been several years since I've trout fished up there, but you're right, it is. It's good trout fishing and just, you know, fun whether you catch anything or not.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But the fishing is pretty good up there.
Well, that's great news, and Senator Corbin, we just appreciate all your efforts in the part that you played in putting that together, and you listeners out there, now that you know how to get there, you need to go up there. It's Tall Pines Wildlife Management Area in northern Greenville County, and so it's great. It's a another piece of heaven that we've managed to preserve for those who love the outdoors to enjoy.
That's exactly right. And listen, guys, in all sincerity, I appreciate what you guys do. Your radio show's great. I enjoy listening every Saturday. Y'all do an amazing job and keeping everybody informed and up to date on everything. And it's entertaining as well. So y'all do an amazing job, and I really appreciate you.
All right. Well, Senator Corbin, I got one favor to ask of you. You said you got a vacuum cleaner you got to deal with right when you get through with us. Okay, I want you to take that thing up to Columbia with you and vacuum up some of them swamp dwellers that's living up there, okay? Can you do that?
I don't believe my vacuum's big enough.
Okay. Well, it was just a thought anyway, Tom. We appreciate your time and everything you do for us, brother.
Yeah, I would love to. Okay, thanks. Anytime.
Yes.
Y'all have a great afternoon, and I will talk to you soon, I hope.
Yes, sir.
All right, sounds good.
I couldn't help myself.
Oh, yeah. That was a lot better than what you said you was going to tell him to do. before the show.
Well, you and Moneypenny are my you know, y'all my psychic therapists, and y'all have to gear Springer down before they actually turn this microphone on. Okay.
There you go. Poor Springer.
No, man. I mean, you know, a lot of people listen to this radio station. They know what's going on up there. I don't know how the man does it. I'd have to go home and watch and Clorox bleach after hanging around that bunch of parasites for a while. Go ahead, Phil.
Tommy Springer, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk about a article from Field and Stream that addresses the decline in turkey numbers, not just in South Carolina, but across the Southeast and other parts of the country.
Right here on Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD. Tommy Springer, Philip Gentry. We're going to talk what's going on with the turkeys right after these messages. Stay tuned, please.
Yeah, today's fashion statements involve hip boots and rain gear. So I pulled this article off of fieldandstream.com. Very catchy headline, special report, why are wild turkey numbers declining in the eastern United States? Started reading through the article, and the further I read into it, the less really stock I put in the article. But it does bring up, you know, a good subject to discuss on the radio here, and we'll kind of – I won't go through and read all the article. Talks about the good old days of turkey hunting and so on and so forth, and then it gets into taking stock and saying part of the reason why a lot of folks are saying, oh, there's a decline in turkeys, was because up through about the 2000s there was a boom in turkey numbers.
Agreed.
Okay, so everybody's like, man, just, you know, limited out, especially here in South Carolina, it was 5 turkeys per hunter
doubles
per season. And, you know, you were taking doubles and you know, killing a lot of turkeys. And so, and part of that, I think, is on the perception of the hunter is things aren't as good as they used to be. And they said, well, why is that? And part of that they get into is they said, well, the poult production is not up, you know, like it used to be. And it goes into a couple of different things. They quoted a survey that was done in Kentucky, and they're talking about one of the things is we don't have the same habitat that
Agreed.
The pine plantations don't make for the good habitat for turkey reproduction, you know, like mixed-use forest and the edge of agricultural areas and stuff like that, especially hardwoods. You know, I would have a hard time naming any place in the state, I guess maybe other than up in northern Greenville County where they can't get to,
yeah,
that has, you know, large stands of just hardwoods.
Agreed.
And even in that, it's got a lot of mixed pine in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't hear about, oh, man, there's a lot of turkeys up there because that's some tough terrain. Tough terrain to try to hunt. But they get into poult production, and then they talk about the poults are not surviving because of disease. And you know, I mean, I don't know. If you look at this and compare it with deer hunting and say, okay, well, we've got several across the country, we've got several deer hunting diseases that are taking its toll. I'm trying to think, I haven't, there's a parasite. There's been a parasite problem with turkey poults, in some cases that, you know, maybe explain why some of them, and then hunting pressure. Obviously, that's not going to take a toll on the poults, but hunting pressure on, which is just really supposed to be on the gobblers,
right?
So, you know, once they get their job done, one of the things that they don't point out here that I think is really needs to be addressed, that addresses habitat, poult production, everything, is control burns.
Agreed. Number one.
And it's not it maybe it's because the author cites several different, you know, people from the National Wild Turkey Federation, and also from the National Forest Service, and the National Forest Service gets a lot of heat every year, and maybe rightfully so, about both the timing of control burns,
yeah,
the intensity of control burns, and a lot of people are saying, well, wow, you know, they want to go back through after control burns and say, you know, we found X number of turkey nests. So I don't know what the solution is to that. I mean, you don't want to have public land that does not get control burned. Then you're going to wind up with stuff like you see out in California.
Agreed. And that's, I think that's spot on, because I've hunted in places that was predominantly pines. Okay.
Yep.
Turkey population off the chart. But what do they do every year in that place, Philip? In certain places, they control burn.
Yeah.
Okay. Great turkey populations. All right. Now let's move this. Let's move this to right here on top of us. Okay. Habitat loss, number one, especially in my area.
Yeah.
Okay. I was killing turkeys like hand over fist. Okay. There was a lot of agricultural. There was a lot of hardwood. Now civilization has come aboard. Okay. And the turkeys have vacated the area. Now, if you go east, you were driving around a lot this week in this kind of weather. How many turkeys you see out in fields this week?
Tons. Yeah.
But that ain't nowhere around where this.
No, it's out in the rural area.
Exactly.
And speaking of which, they actually, the article references heavy rain and below average temperatures in May creating a problem for poults. And I don't want to open the whole can of worms about global warming and climate and stuff like that. But,
right.
But that's part of where this is going too, is they're saying, oh, well, we just seem to have wetter springs than we used to have and stuff like that. I personally believe weather is cyclical. If you look at 100-year cycles,
amen,
it's not that much different. But nobody's been around for 100 years.
Yeah.
It's just like, man, I hadn't seen it rain this much. Okay, well,
Stick
around for another 100 years.
And tell me the same thing.
And you'll see the cycle.
Exactly.
I think predators is another big one, and we're going to address that during the second hour of the show, talking with Senator Stephen Goldfinch about coyote population control and the bill that he's put out there to try to reduce coyote populations, because it has been shown that coyotes take a toll on wild turkeys and
possum and coons,
and deer. But yeah, that's something that rarely gets addressed too. I mean, it seems to me like the
they'll get the eggs before. I mean, they don't even get a chance to come out of the egg.
Well, now I got no sympathy for raccoons.
Me either.
Okay, whatsoever. But it seems like to me, if you look at social media, a lot of folks are coming out with the possum, going, well, just because they're ugly, they eat their weight in ticks and everything. So yeah, they also eat a lot of turkey eggs too.
Bingo.
So I don't know if that has having an effect on it or not.
I mean, there's not a whole lot of, small varmint killing like they used to be back in the day when the furs was actually worth something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, the turkeys nest on the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, at night, the eggs are chupacabras could be eating them, for goodness sakes.
Well, and they've actually shown, you know, like wild pigs.
Exactly. Pigs eat the whole nest.
And I think part of the
crows.
Problem that we're having is that we've got a lot of invasive species.
Great.
Again, going back to the coyotes and going back to the wild pigs that are taking their toll on the turkeys.
I mean, I've sat and watched crows beg and just make a hen just bother her so she gets off the nest, and guess what happens to the nest?
Then they go and eat
eggs. Go and eat every egg in the nest. You know, it's crazy. So.
I don't know. I mean, like I said, I didn't get into this to suggest a solution.
Right.
I think it's
our thoughts.
It's a multifaceted problem.
Agreed.
I do think if you want to add to, the problems that we face, is the control burns.
Yes, I would. Number one.
Which is on the one hand, is good for habitat, later on. But if you've already got a reduced population and you're burning during their nesting season,
not good.
And a lot of the explanation has been, well, you know, if turkeys nest and their nest is lost, they'll go back and nest again. Well, okay, so, you know, why do the timing of that?
Right.
And I have heard also, we kind of jumped here in South Carolina with backing the season up and saying, well, that's the worst thing we could have done. We did reduce
the numbers,
the bag numbers,
yes,
from 5 to 3, but at the same time, we backed up the season dates.
Yep.
And a lot of folks are saying, look, you know, you're killing gobblers before before the breeding season even starts, because it's easier.
Yeah.
And so you're taking out a lot of those males that the hens are dependent on.
Right.
So I don't know. I've not seen studies about how many males it takes to
complex.
Repopulate.
It's a complex deal. I mean, the whole thing is just trying to figure it out. And on a lighter note, I got my turkey tags in the mail this week.
Yep.
It sure did.
I gotta give a shout out. I got a buddy of mine down on the coast, and we've had him on the show here, Justin Carter.
Oh,
and,
hey, Justin.
And I tell Carter, so you know, you could go to the Common Sense Retirement Planning text line at 71307 and put your text in. But he's been texting in on my personal line, and he's had some good insight here talking about, you know, fire ants are also.
Oh, my goodness. We completely forgot about that.
Fire ants.
And that's big.
And
because there's more fire ants now than there's ever been in this part of the world. So, ever.
So I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what you do. I think we're taking a step in the right direction by reducing, you know, the creel number,
right,
which a lot of hunters don't particularly care for that. But anyway,
it is what it is.
Well, let's go to our break. When we come back, the top of the hour, we'll bring you the news and the Roadkill Cafe.
Stay tuned. Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD. Get you some.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.